Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. My name is Justin Asiri, and each week I meet with a member of the armed forces to talk about what they do now that they are a civilian. My intention is for those of you who are on active duty, those of you who maybe even transitioned years ago, helping you figure out all the different career possibilities that are out there and what it might take to get there. My guest today for episode number 158 is Sean Ponder.
I'm going to give you great advice. And I bet that 99% of you won't take it. Buy a home everywhere you're stationed. Real estate will always be good in a military town. If you sell it, great. Keep it and rent it. If you're there, you leave, someone's got to come take your spot. That's advice you'll never listen to. And I didn't listen to it. But I remember when I was preparing for my transition to D.C., I really want to buy, because I didn't buy in San Diego, and I felt like I missed an opportunity there. So when I was going through that process in D.C. of looking for a home, I did a lot of the work myself, a lot of the research. I put together my list. I had my criteria. I knocked off homes for different reasons. I was analyzing neighborhoods. So I really made my agent's job pretty easy. And it got me to thinking on, why can't I just do this myself?
Well, today's episode is all about real estate, how buying a house and binging on HGTV led Sean Ponder to a second career, in real estate. I've been trying for the last several months to get a veteran in real estate on the show. Sean is the first person I've had on the show to speak about this career path. So we talk a lot about real estate, but we talk about a lot of other topics that I think are going to be relevant to any career path. We discuss the pros and cons of working with headhunters and how this may set your salary at a starting point lower than if you were to go directly to a company. We talk briefly about Lockheed Martin, where Sean started the first 9 years of his civilian career, and we talk about how Sean kept his day job while building up a real estate practice. It was something that really helped him get ahead. As always, at beyondtheuniform.io, you'll find show notes with links to everything we discuss. You'll also find a link to iTunes, where I would greatly appreciate it if you have time to leave a review for the show. Stick around after the episode. We'll have a little fireside chat, a little discussion where I talk through some of the takeaways I had from this conversation, and I welcome your thoughts in the show notes comment section as well. So with that, let's dive in to my interview with fellow submariner and fellow Naval Academy 2002 alum, Sean Ponder. Joining me today in Washington, D.C. is Sean Ponder. Sean, welcome to Beyond the Uniform.
Great. Thanks for having me.
So I wanted to give listeners an abbreviated background on Sean. He is an associate broker at S&G Realty, where he assists home buyers, sellers, and developers in the Virginia, Maryland, and Washington, D.C. areas. He started out at the Naval Academy, a member of the mighty class of 2002 along with me, after which he served as a submarine officer for 5 years as part of the crew of the USS Salt Lake City. He also worked at Lockheed Martin for 9 years before joining S&G Realty. So, Sean, maybe to start things off, could you take us through just going back to that very first job search when you left the Navy, what that was like and what brought you to Lockheed Martin?
The job search was definitely stressful. It's probably the first word that comes to mind. So when I was looking at making my transition from active duty, I was actually in the shipyard decommissioning in Salt Lake City, and we were on a pretty reduced manning, so I was essentially port and report in the duty section. So it was pretty difficult to look for jobs. I knew that I wanted to be in the D.C. area. It was one of the where I focused my search on. So I did a lot. I mainly used headhunters. And I did some searching myself for jobs, but I was largely dependent upon headhunters. It made sense at the time because it allowed me to get the greatest amount of exposure to companies in a short period of time because of the way they do their hiring fairs. And also because I really didn't know what I wanted to do when I left active duty or what people would actually hire me to do, where they thought my skills would best fit. So the headhunter route seemed to make sense. I figured I can rely on some of these experts to comb through my military experience and kind of present opportunities. And that's how I came across Lockheed Martin. It was presented to me at one of the Headhunter events that I attended.
Well, you're not not alone on that by any stretch. I feel like in 150-plus of these interviews, most people are daunted by the transition, and very few have an idea what they want to do. And it's funny, even those who are 10 years or 15 years past their transition point, there's still many people are still figuring that out. But it sounds like the Headhunter approach was at least a quick and efficient way to get the lay of the land and find that first job opportunity.
Yeah, it definitely worked out, and it was definitely a learning experience. You know, if I had to do all over again, I probably would try to do a little bit more research and not rely on the headhunter. The downside of working with a headhunter, of course, is that they need to get paid somehow, and that typically equates to them getting a commission off of you, which with a lot of companies means that they're paying, they recognize that your talent and what you bring is worth $100,000, but they're going to pay you $85,000 because they're going to pay the headhunter $15,000. So you essentially enter the market at a discounted rate to that employer. So it's not like your second year of employment you magically get this $15,000 raise. You know, it's just you kind of set your starting point a little bit lower than had you been able to get hired on directly by the company.
That's great advice. For people who are listening, if they're on active duty, how would you explain to them the type of work that you did while you were at Lockheed Martin?
So at Lockheed Martin, I started off in business development. It's actually where I spent most of my career there. So business development is essentially a sales and marketing type role. I had no clue what it was when they presented the offer to me, but Lockheed actually offered me two positions in business development. One in D.C. working Homeland Security portfolio, and one working with Aegis B&B out of Morristown, New Jersey. Well, Morristown wasn't my desired location, and I didn't know what business development was, but since they offered me two positions in doing that kind of role, I figured it was something they thought I would be good at. So I took the job in D.C., and in that role was a lot of essentially being the go-between between the engineers and the customer. So I would tell people that basically I translated engineer speak into everyday English. I had enough technical background to help kind of bridge the gap when it came time to talk about requirements and how that translated to an actual solution. And then that role kind of grew. I actually got a chance to work on capture, so responding to proposals or requests for a proposal from the government to try to win new business. Eventually, I was given an opportunity to become the executive assistant to the president of MS2, which is one of the largest sectors in Lockheed Martin. So I was asked to interview for that position, and it turns out that the president at the time was Fred Missali, Naval Academy grad, former Navy captain. And I had a great interview. He and I clicked, and I remember walking out of the interview. He said, "I like the cut of your jib." So I took that as being a good sign, and it turns out it was. So I had an amazing opportunity working for Fred up until his retirement. And then I stayed on in the position to work for his successor for another year. So I was in that role for about 3 years, all the way up until I was mobilized back to active duty because I'm still in the reserves. So I went over to Djibouti with the Task Force Horn of Africa for about 14 months. And Lockheed was great, super supportive while I was gone. I kept in touch with, you know, several coworkers and colleagues. They actually, you know, paid me differential pay while I was gone as well. So I wasn't impacted financially by my service. And then when I came back, I went back into a business development role. This time with a different portfolio. I had a portfolio focused on undersea warfare and unmanned systems. And I did that in the business development role for another year, and then went into a business development role in our service company, the Lockheed Service Company, supporting a defense healthcare portfolio. And I had that portfolio up until I decided to make the change to real estate.
That's great. And I want to spend the bulk of our time on real estate. I'm just kind of curious, because you're the first person I've had on the show who worked at Lockheed Martin. And I'm just kind of curious if you could give the quick rundown for someone on active duty. You know, what are some indications that they might really enjoy doing a career at or starting their career at a company like Lockheed Martin? And what are some indications that maybe they wouldn't like that?
Well, for me, the reason to go to Lockheed, the side reason why I accepted that job offer over others was the reputation of the company and their commitment to the military. I actually am from a small town in Florida called Ocala, and there's a Lockheed Martin plant there. So I had friends of the family that had worked there for years. So when I was interviewing and got, you know, presented the offer, I called them, asked their opinion of the company, and everyone had nothing but glowing things to say about the company and the culture. The fact that I got an opportunity to speak to a bunch of people that had been with Lockheed for an entire career, you know, so 20 years plus, I thought that was pretty significant, because you really don't see that a lot in the industries. But that influenced my decision to take that position with Lockheed, but I had already kind of zoomed in on the location and salaries being my two top requirements. But I will, when I talk to people who are looking at defense companies, Lockheed in particular, I can't say enough great things about the overall culture there when it comes to ethics and support of the military. That really played a big role in why I stayed as long as I did.
That's great. And I liked too that little snippet you said, where you said that you had prioritized salary and location. I think that's awesome, because I think that it can be daunting, especially in that first career move, to figure out what to do. But when you start putting stakes in the ground, like in your case, it sounds like you really wanted to be in a specific geographic area and you wanted to maintain continuity of your salary. I think, you know, while that closes many doors, I think that makes things easier, because then you're able to focus on specific jobs and roles that meet those requirements. And a lot of times when I talk to veterans, they have this I'll do anything mentality, which actually makes it harder, because then you don't know who to introduce them to. You don't know where to point them. And so I think that's a great aspect that you highlighted.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I was overwhelmed by the amount of opportunities that were presented to me. I really just had to figure out a way to narrow down the list. And that's how I chose.
I love that. And I wonder if you could share, because I want to spend the bulk of our time on real estate. Let's just start with, you know, when you're at Lockheed Martin, what sparks this interest in real estate? How did you first decide to make that transition?
Well, I think the thing that kind of got my interest going was when I moved to D.C., I wanted to buy a house. I didn't want to rent. I wanted to buy something, because I still credit that as one of my, you know, great mistakes, is that I did not purchase when I was stationed out in San Diego. And I reflect all the time back to words that my first year weapons teacher said to the class once. He's like, I'm going to give you great advice, and I bet that 99% of you won't take it. Buy a home everywhere you're stationed. Real estate will always be good in a military town. If you sell it, great. Keep it and rent it. If you're there, you leave, someone's got to come take your spot. Best advice you'll never listen to. And I didn't listen to it. But I remember when I was preparing for my transition to D.C., I was like, I really want to buy, because I didn't buy in San Diego, and I felt like I missed an opportunity there. So when I was going through that process in D.C. of looking for a home, I did a lot of the work myself, a lot of the research. I put together my list. I had my criteria. I knocked off homes for different reasons. I was analyzing neighborhoods. So I really made my agent's job pretty easy. And it got me to thinking on, you know, why can't I just do this myself? So I started looking more into what it takes to become, after experience, look more into what it takes to become a real estate agent. And D.C. has got such a great market for real estate that it's hard to have a conversation about almost anything and not have it kind of dovetail into real estate. So I continued to do research and just, you know, reading different blogs, and it just continued to, you know, fan the flames of my interest. And of course, I became a HGTV addict with all this real estate shows. And then eventually I decided, you know, let me just go ahead and get my license. So it was around the time that I was thinking about selling my condo. So I went ahead and, you know, took the classes and was like, I can do this. I really can do this. And so I got my license and really enjoyed it. I mean, that first year with my license working part-time while I was sort of hockeyed, I did around 6 transactions my first year part-time, which is more than what a lot of full-time agents do. After that, I was definitely hooked. I continued to do it part-time for a while and reached a point where although I enjoyed what I was doing at Lockheed, I didn't love it. I wasn't passionate about it. But I really, really enjoyed real estate. So I started looking at ways that I could do real estate full-time.
That's great. I mean, I love so much about your story. I love just that the experience of actually buying a home raises this question of like, why can't I do this? And I love, my wife and I binge on HGTV whenever we're traveling as well. And there's so many great shows. And I like how the path to this new career, it sounds like it was pretty gradual. And I especially admire that you maintained your job at Lockheed. You had, you know, what people call your side hustle. You're doing these transactions, and 6 transactions part-time is incredible. And you're able to kind of get that experience and validate that you really enjoy it and start making money. And I imagine that made the shift from Lockheed to doing this full-time easier. And that's one of the things I was curious about is, you know, your path seems to be that you had a career and then you gradually transitioned to real estate. You know, if someone knew that they wanted to go directly into real estate, do you recommend that they get another job just to kind of be able to pay the bills and allow them to take the real estate license and grow into this? Or is there a path to just diving in straight out of the gates from active duty?
Well, I'm a fairly conservative guy. So that's why the transition, doing a part-time transitioning into full-time, really worked for me. I wanted to make sure that it's something that I would enjoy. When I was initially, you know, looking for jobs, leaving active duty, I actually stayed away from pure sales jobs because I was concerned about that. You know, if you don't kill it, you're not going to eat. You know, if you're not selling something, you're not getting paid. And that's what real estate is. So you have to have that kind of mentality, or at least that type of preparation for the fact that if the market's slow or you're just not converting on leads, it could be a while in between paychecks. And if you're comfortable with that, definitely, I'd say, you know, dive right in. There are actually a bunch of programs that are set up to make it easier for veterans to do that. Most states, through their state VA offices, offer tuition assistance to pay for the pre-licensure courses for you to get your license. And if I believe you can actually use some of your GI benefits to do so as well. So there are things put in, you know, programs put in place to help make that transition easier for the go-getter who wants to dive right in, or even for someone who wants to do the more conservative route like I did.
And you know, as you were kind of making headway towards this as a career, you had mentioned that there's an exam. Could you just talk about like kind of what certifications or exams you need to take to become a licensed real estate agent or broker, and then also what you did to prepare for it or would recommend for people to prepare to actually pass that exam?
Well, the actual requirement varies state by state on the number of hours, but generally there's a classroom component where you have to do so many hours of pre-licensure education. So it's mainly focused on the legal aspects of real estate real estate transactions. So understanding fair housing, there's federal standards, and then there's state standards as well. So there's so many classes of federal protected classes, so many federal protected classes, but then you go to a jurisdiction like D.C., and there are even more protected classes than there are on the federal level. So you're setting that aspect. You're setting about, you're learning more about the different insurance requirements, requirements regarding earnest money deposits, how to handle transactions, giving proper care to your client. So the classes are focused on that. Once you meet the hour requirement, you can then go take your exam. You pass the exam, and depending upon the jurisdiction, you may also be required to do a background check and fingerprinting. D.C. does not require fingerprinting, but Virginia does. You know, so I'm licensed in D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. So I took a national examination that covered all three, and then I took three separate state portions of a salesperson examination. Then I eventually went and got my broker's license in D.C., so I have to take another exam for that. And I'm in the process of taking my getting my broker's license for Maryland and Virginia as well. So two more exams associated with that. So that's just getting your license, and then to maintain your license in good standing, there's continuing education requirements that vary from state to state on, as far as how many hours and what topics are required.
And I guess just, you know, it kind of varies by state. How long do you think that takes to go through that process? Is that something that someone needs to allocate maybe 3 months for? Is it like 6 months? I'm just kind of thinking, if someone was getting out and wanting to sell houses right away, knowing that they can't do that right away, there's kind of these preliminary steps. How long would you recommend they kind of allot for that process?
There's different options, and it really depends on how much time you have as far as picking which option works best for you. So because I was still working full-time, I took my classes on Saturdays, so the all-day Saturday, and then Tuesday and Thursday evenings. And going at that rate, it took 3 months.
Okay, great.
It was scheduled to take shorter, but I had to reschedule a couple of the Saturday classes because of reserve duty.
Okay.
There are options for schools that offer all day, every day, and you can knock out your classes in a couple of weeks.
You had a lot of balls juggling for a little while between Lockheed, the reserves, and preparing for your next career. I don't imagine you got had a lot of free time to binge on Netflix or do the stuff that we normally do in free time.
No, not. It was pretty tight there for a while, but of course the Navy was great preparation for that type of heavy workload.
And I'll reveal some of my ignorance here, since you're the first person on the show to talk about real estate. I was hoping you could maybe just, before we dive into what you do, set the stage for the landscape. Like, you know, when I think of finance, I think that there's private equity, there's hedge funds, there's investment bankers, there's private wealth management. And for real estate, I know there is – you know, I know there's residential and commercial, and maybe there's even a third bucket, but I imagine then you said you're a broker. So I'm like, okay, within residential real estate, maybe there's a broker, but something else. Could you kind of just kind of take us through the very high level flavors that fall under the overall umbrella of real estate?
Okay. Well, as far as the roles go, salesperson and broker, a broker can be a salesperson, but a salesperson doesn't have to be a broker. I'm sure that clears it all up. But basically, it's the broker is a higher level. You're expected to have a higher understanding. There's more hours required. Most states require that before you can become a broker, you have to have been a salesperson for a certain number of years. So salespeople work for brokers. So in a transaction, the salesperson is the broker's representative. The broker is the one that's actually a party to the transaction. The salesperson is working on their behalf. So even when it comes time to collect the commission, the commission check is not made out directly to the salesperson. It's made to the broker. And then the broker sends the salesperson their portion of the commission. kind of a reporting responsibility. So the broker is responsible for overseeing salespeople, making sure that they're conducting all of their transactions properly, maintaining their education. They have the overall responsibility. As far as residential and commercial, the distinction, the line, you know, can blur. And I know I blur it on a routine basis because I do work with developers, and a big thing in urban areas like DC is mixed-use development. So I may represent a developer who's buying a commercial property, like an old store or an old parking lot, and they plan on turning it into ground floor retail with condos up above. So the big difference between commercial and residential is really the type of property. But if you're a licensed salesperson, you can do both types of transactions. There aren't additional licensing requirements for working in commercial versus residential. It's just real estate sales, which is why the licensing process focuses so heavily on the legal aspects and of the transaction, more so than on the actual operation or, you know, how to be a real estate agent. You learn how to be a real estate agent once you get in a brokerage. That's what your broker is there for, to teach you how to actually be a real estate agent.
That's great. I really appreciate the crisp articulation there. I didn't really realize those distinctions. So, you know, given that you're a broker, could you kind of take us through? I know one of the parts of the interviews people enjoy most is just a glimpse, a snippet of your day-to-day life. And so as granular as you're able to be, like, you know, when you start work, when you stop work, could you just kind of walk us through what average or representative day would look like, and kind of what sorts of things you're doing to fill your day?
Sure. Well, no day is quite like the day before. Just one big, going back to the difference in residential and commercial, a big difference is that typically commercial brokers work during business hours. So they're meeting with clients that are conducting real estate transactions as a part of their job. So during the day is when all of their business really happens, Monday through Friday. There's not typically a lot of late nights or weekends involved with commercial brokerage. Residential, on the other hand, because you're dealing with potential homeowners that have another job, they actually have a job that doesn't involve real estate, they're busy most times 9 to 5. So a lot of your interaction with them happens on the weekends and after work in the evening. So my days can be long at times, but I have a lot of flexibility, and it's part of the reason that I enjoy it. Because I do have a young child at home, I have to maximize my time. So I'm typically awake at 4:30 in the morning. That's my time to get myself ready for the day, and then be able to spend about an hour or so going through emails, creating my to-do list for the day, getting organized for everything that lays ahead before I, you know, wake up my son and help get him ready for school. And then I'm off to the office. While I'm in the office, it's me. I continue filling my time with anything from just researching properties, calling back leads, creating marketing campaigns, scheduling showings. You know, if I do have a client that is able to, you know, get away during their lunch break and they want to see a property, you know, I'm off running around town, meeting them and showing them properties. And then typically in the evening, 2 to 3 days a week, I'm usually working with clients until about 7 o'clock, you know, so trying to meet them right after work, spend an hour or so with them, showing them properties, discussing the home buying process. And then Saturdays and Sundays are a busy time for a real estate agent, because, like I said, that's when people are off, so you're spending a lot of time running around with them. Most open houses for residential real estate tend to happen on Sundays, kind of become like the de facto day. Occasionally you'll have one on a Saturday as well. So if I have a listing that I'm representing the seller on, I may be busy for 2 to 3 hours on a Sunday afternoon hosting an open house at a property. And then after the open house, there's a follow-up with everyone that came through.
Sounds busy, man. I mean, it's just interesting. This career path, more than most I have on the show, I feel like most veterans can kind of relate to this because they've maybe bought a house or their parent, you know, they've seen this. It's a little bit more tangible. But I appreciate the behind the scenes look of just and I hadn't thought of that, where, you know, when you're working with people buying a home, they don't generally have time during the day to do that. And so you're having to accommodate that weekend and evening scheduling. And then I imagine that, you know, while you're out showing and you're, you know, taking people through property, everything else builds up. And so at the end of the day, you still got to clean up email and kind of all that admin stuff.
Yeah. So it could be a lot of late nights or early mornings, depending on how you like to organize your time. But effective time management is key to being successful and surviving in this business.
What's you know, for someone who's interested, you've kind of already touched on this a little bit, but what are some of the best and worst parts of your job as someone's thinking of this as a career option? It sounds like, you know, one of the downsides might be the not necessarily the volume of hours that you're working, but kind of when those hours fall out in a week. But could you kind of highlight some of the attractive and unattractive aspects of this?
No, I think you hit on the biggest one right there, is, managing time. One of my big reasons for, you know, making the transition from Lockheed to real estate was that I wanted to have more time to spend with my family. And although my schedule for the week can be kind of erratic because of showings, I actually have way more time at home with my family, which is what I love about this job. I'm pretty flexible during the day, so if I need to, you know, take off for an appointment or a doctor's appointment for, you know, my son, or the school delay or something like that, I can do that easily. If my wife needs to, you know, go to work early or work late, we need to kind of all flex our schedules on, you know, who's doing what with the baby or around the house. I have that ability. It does make scheduling weekends a little difficult. It makes it important that we maintain a family calendar because I'm, you know, constantly de-conflicting personal commitments with showings when it comes to the weekends. And then, of course, throw in reserve duty. It's another, you know, block on the calendar. The time management is really the biggest thing. It can be, the schedule can be a plus and a minus if you're not careful.
That's great. And then in terms of career paths, so, you know, from what you've said earlier, it sounds like generally starting out, someone would start in as a salesperson and then progress to broker. Is there any, like, kind of typical career paths from there? Is it like, are you a broker for the rest of your career? Or does it transition beyond that? Or what routes do you see people taking from that broker position?
Honestly, most people don't get their broker's license. Mm-hmm. It's not required. If you're a salesperson, you can sell. You know, you can buy and sell real estate. There's no need to get your broker's license. The reason for getting a broker's license is if you have an interest in having a larger role or leadership role within your brokerage, or potentially being the principal broker of record. So right now I'm an associate broker, meaning that I am a licensed broker, but I'm not the bottom line on the contract. I'm not the one that's ultimately responsible for the licensees within my brokerage. But as a broker, as a licensed broker, I can be delegated certain tasks if needed to support my brokerage. Mm. So it's definitely not a requirement that you get your broker's license. You can have a long and amazing career in real estate with just your salesperson's license.
One thing I'm curious about too, now that you're saying that, so you work at S&G Realty. If someone's interested in going this path, I'm assuming that most salespeople, they're joining a company like S&G Realty. They're joining a larger entity. I mean, they seems like they would have to because they need a broker to oversee it. But is that true? Is it kind of like the main entry into this is to join an existing real estate company?
Yes, it's actually the only way in. Okay. So by law, a salesperson's license is actually issued to the broker. The broker is responsible for maintaining that license. Going back to what I said earlier, the salesperson works on behalf of a broker. You cannot be an independent salesperson alone and unafraid conducting your own transactions. Mm-hmm. You have to be working under the supervision and license of a principal broker.
Mm. Okay, great. And then my assumption, and I imagine this varies based on where you're working, but my assumption is that as a salesperson and probably as a broker as well, there's some consistent month-to-month base salary, and then the bulk of the compensation is when you actually have that transaction and sell a home. And I'm curious if that's correct, and then also just kind of rough range. You know, in my mind, I'm like, I think that when you sell a house, the person who helps you sell it gets like 8%, but I'm sure that you know, gets broken down between the different people at the company. Could you just kind of talk broadly about compensation structure?
If they're getting 8% commissions in California, I need to pack up and move. there's not typically an actual fixed salary that you receive as a salesperson.
Okay.
Most brokerages are commission based.
Okay.
So that's what I was saying earlier about if you've got the mentality and you've got the confidence, you want to jump in it right away and kind of learn as you go, there's a risk in that it is a sales job. So if you don't sell, you're not collecting a commission, you're not getting paid. There are different brokerage models, though, but the purely sales, the purely commission-based model is the predominant one. Companies and brokerages like Redfin do offer a base salary, but they also offer much, much, much smaller commission splits. There's also not a set or standard commission. We're not supposed to talk about the type of commissions that we receive, the size, because might be construed as colluding on commissions. Mm. But typically, you'll see commissions range for a transaction, from upwards of 3% and higher. Okay. It can be lower. I've had transactions where the commission for the cooperating agent was 1%. Mm. Others where it was 3%. It really depends. Each transaction is different. The listing agent, so the seller typically pays a commission that's to be split by the buying agent and selling agent.
And if someone is listening and they've really liked the description you've given for this career path, and they think this is what I want to do when I get out of the military, what advice do you have for them about going after this career path?
Well, if they're interested in getting real estate and they're in the D.C. area, say give me a call. always looking for more agents to work with to add to the team. When I got my license, that's actually one of the things that I did. When I was trying to figure out which brokerage to go with, I sought out other vets. Actually, I joined a team that was led by one of our classmates. And so I started with him. I learned about real estate and was with this team for several years before coming over to this brokerage.
That's great. And then is there any books or podcasts or programs that if someone's interested in real estate that you would recommend they check out?
There are a ton of books out there on the subject. Couple books that I really enjoyed, the Zillow Speaks book. So basically the guys behind Zillow wrote a book a few years ago that tried to break down some of the data behind different real estate markets, different trends, identifying trends, to help agents and anyone really better understand the market and some of the dynamics behind it. One of the books that's considered like the book for every agent to read is The Millionaire Real Estate Agent by Gary Keller. So Gary Keller of Keller Williams fame. There's another book by Gary Keller called The Shift that I would also recommend. Podcasts, there's no shortage of them. I probably have about five or six podcasts that I subscribe to. One that I really enjoy is called Bigger Pockets, and it has some great information for anyone that's interested in real estate, whether as an agent or just as an investor on the run.
That's great. And for listeners, I'll add in the show notes, I'll add links to the podcast and the books there. Well, Sean, I always like to reserve the last question open-ended, and that's that you've covered so many different topics. For me, coming into this knowing nothing about real estate, I feel like I know a lot more about it than when I started. And I'm sure there's things that we didn't cover that you could share with listeners. And I just want to kind of give you the mic for the end here, and just anything we didn't cover that you'd like to share with listeners before we wrap up.
I mean, I guess one thing I'd say in closing is that, you know, I love what I do. Every day is different. It's exciting. Not to say this without its frustrations. I've had transactions that haven't gone according to plan and, you know, have left me with my banging my head against the wall. But I wouldn't change anything. I highly recommend real estate as a career for anyone who feels they have an interest in real estate, construction, working with people. I think those are, if your interests align along those lines, it's worth considering.
Awesome, Sean. Well, I appreciate your taking the time to share your story with the Beyond the Uniform audience today.
Not a problem. Thanks for the opportunity.
Surface.
Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Sean. I just wanted to really quickly do a little after the episode recap to try and get more value from this conversation. These were some of the more salient points that stuck out in my mind. I welcome your thoughts in the show notes comment section about what sticks around in your mind. First of all, I love that he talked about when he first was exiting the Navy, he was on port and report in the shipyard, and it didn't afford a lot of time for him to find his next career. And that is one of the unspoken recommendations in almost every interview I've done, which is prepare in advance. You never know what's going to be going on in active duty before you get out. Give yourself the time before you get out to transition, but also ideally saving up finances to give yourself that 6 months after you get out to really take your time to find your first job. I liked what he said about headhunters doing more research and realizing that they get paid, and oftentimes that commission comes out of your salary. Not always the case, but sometimes the case. So knowing that they are incentivized to get you in a job as quickly as possible, and sometimes that might not be the ideal job for you. So being your own advocate, doing your own research, and really sticking with what works for you, being accountable to yourself. I appreciate it as well. He talked about being overwhelmed by the number of opportunities available. And I love the approach he took in really narrowly defining very early on in the process what he wanted and didn't want in that career. And for him, that was as simple as saying, I'm committed to this location and this level of pay. And of course, that closes many doors, but it makes it so much easier to then narrow the playing field and go after what he really wanted. I liked that when he was at Lockheed Martin, that he enjoyed it, but realized he wanted to do something different, and he started to really hustle on the side. And if you haven't heard me give my pitch for Gary Vee and Gary Vaynerchuk and his podcast, I think it's a great show, mainly about side hustle, about really working on the side and working it. And I think Sean really did an admirable job of maintaining his job, maintaining his salary while figuring out if he really wanted to do real estate and taking those exams and getting ready and actually doing 6 transactions, which is mind-boggling, doing that part-time. You may have heard me talk about Elizabeth Gilbert in her book Big Magic. She says, don't put so much pressure on your inspiration. Don't expect inspiration to not only inspire you, but also to pay the bills. And she talks about authors who she encourages to write in the nooks and crannies of their day at before 6 a.m. and after 10 p.m. when they're done with their job, and that life rewards you when you're willing to hustle, not just kind of expect the universe to give you a great job and reward you financially right away, because so often it takes so much longer to make money off of something. So I loved that. I love it as well. He pointed out that you might be able to use the GI Bill towards getting this real estate license. I loved, especially since Sean was the first person on the show, I loved how he broke down the distinction between salesperson and broker, between residential and commercial real estate. That's worth re-listening to if you're thinking of going down this path, and start finding people who have done those different roles. That's what I'm going to be doing for the show. I hope to get another person in real estate on the show very, very soon. And I love that, the other thing is that it's very clear to me, at least in the conversation, Sean really enjoys what he does. And I encourage you to listen to my episode called So Good They Can't Ignore You. It's a conversation around a book with its author. It's very influential in my life, but I think it could help you as well. So I think there's a danger in just trying to find something you're passionate about. But I love that, after 9 years at Lockheed, he was had the distance and perspective to say, hey, this is great, but it's not really what I want to do the rest of my life, and I think real estate might be that. So I think it speaks to experimentation, to bite size, little small experiments to try and see if something works, and if so, taking that deeper plunge, as Sean did after he'd done a considerable amount of work and homework. That's all my main takeaways. I welcome yours in the comment section at beyonduniform.io. Lots of great episodes coming up. Value your feedback. Let me know what you think. What would be more valuable to you? You can email me at justin@beyonduniform.io or find me on LinkedIn. Those are the best routes. Have a great week. I will be back next week with more interviews with military veterans about their civilian career. Take care.